Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Big Mad True Crime, where we get big mad over true crime. I'm your host, Heather Ashley, and today's case is out of Pennsylvania. Small talk sucks, so let's dive in. On September 7th, 2016, Abington Township Police Department released a missing persons flyer about a 14-year-old girl named Grace Packer. According to the reporter online, it read, "We haven't had much luck finding her, so we thought we would put it out." She had been reported missing almost 2 months prior on July 11th by her 41-year-old adoptive mother, Sarah Packer, who, according to the outlet, had last seen Grace on the 8th of July after she says Grace went to her room after they had an argument about going to a friend's house. Sarah said that when she went to check on her the following morning, Grace was gone and so was $300. Obviously, there are some significant gaps of time there. Sarah claimed that Grace had gone missing by the 9th, but didn't report her missing until the 11th. She told police that Grace had previously run away from home for days at a time, so maybe she was just waiting for her to come back and got concerned on day 2. But this wasn't the first time one of her kids had run away. NBC 10 found an old Facebook post from back in 2009 where she talked about Grace, her younger brother, and two foster children, saying that one of them had run away. She wrote that she called the police and that the child was now nice and safe in the psych ward for a couple of days. Once upon a lifetime, Sarah was actually a supervisor with Youth and Child Services and the foster mother of 30 different foster children over the course of 10 years. She was canned from her job in 2010 after her husband at the time, David, was charged with sexually assaulting two children in the home, one of whom was Grace. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, he pled guilty in 2011 to some lesser charges, was sentenced to 18 months to 5 years in prison, and required to register as a sex offender. He wound up getting paroled just prior to the 5-year mark. At that point, when David was paroled, Sarah and David were estranged, but not divorced yet. 2 years into David's prison sentence, NBC 10 reports that Sarah met a new man online, Jacob Sullivan. She continued to date him for years, and Sarah was still with Jacob when David got out of prison. Sarah and David obviously couldn't have any more foster children, but Grace and her little brother, who were once their foster children, had been adopted by the couple, so they stayed. You see, Grace hadn't always been Grace. According to a really thorough timeline of this case by the Philadelphia Inquirer, Grace was born in 2001 to her birth parents, Rose and Rodney, who had originally named her Susan. I've seen conflicting reports as to why the two lost custody of their three children, but by 2004, they were all put into the foster care system. Initially, they were placed with what seems like a really great family who wanted to adopt all three kids, but got frustrated with the system, and the two youngest, Grace and her brother, were then placed with Sarah and David, who in 2005 started the adoption process. 2 years later, it was finalized, and Grace and her brother had new parents. Sarah and David's first order of business? Changing Grace's name. She had gone by Susan for 6 years, been in at least three different homes with three sets of parents, and now was expected to go by a completely new name. Knowing the background we do, Grace's disappearance just doesn't sit right, and it didn't sit right with anyone who saw the post by Abington police either. Obviously, the elite squad known as the I'm Gonna Find Out unit headed straight to Sarah's Facebook to find out as much as they could about Grace, and there was next to nothing. Generally, you'd expect a mother whose child's been missing for 2 months to be on a mission trying to get the word out. But that wasn't the case at all. She wasn't posting like crazy asking for anyone in the world to care. She wasn't organizing any searches, and it didn't look like the police were either. But there's a little more to their side of that. Grace had been painted as this probable runaway with that story of the argument about going to a friend's house and the disappearing in the middle of the night with $300. But the police got the feeling that something was off by the second day of the investigation. According to NBC 10, when Sarah reported Grace missing, she didn't give them any photos. She told them she'd bring them by the next day, but she never showed up. Sarah became a ghost. For the next 2 months, the police tried contacting Sarah over and over again, but got zero response. By September 7th, they went to her house to try and contact her in person, only to find out that the house was vacant. Eventually, authorities were able to track Sarah down, and according to the outlet, she had moved to a completely different county. They did a little more digging and found out that Sarah had enrolled Grace's brother into the school system in this new county, but never enrolled Grace. Sure, Grace had gone missing in between school years, but the fact that Sarah flat out hadn't even bothered to enroll her daughter into the school system felt like she didn't plan on Grace ever actually coming home. To make matters worse, remember that argument about going to a friend's house that Sarah claims started all of this? Police tracked down the family, and according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, they never had any plans for Grace to come over. In fact, she had never been to their house, ever. With all of this new information, police were finally able to make contact with Sarah, who apologized to them for not letting them know she had moved, which feels so out of place that it's hard to put into words. "Oh, sorry I never dropped off those pictures of my missing daughter, didn't respond to your attempts to contact me throughout the investigation, and forgot to let you know I moved." This feels more like the behavior of an offender than it does someone who's looking for their child. According to NBC 10, photos of Grace magically showed up at the police station the next day, along with a typed letter supposedly written by Grace. It read, "I know that you guys are at your breaking point, and I understand. I love you guys. I always have, and I always will." I've seen conflicting reports as to whether or not police believe it was actually Grace who wrote it, but the bottom line was that all of a sudden there was this letter, but it wasn't new. According to the reporter online, it had been written back in March and was pulled from her school records. But in March, Grace had only been back with Sarah for about 4 months. And yes, there's a story there. Since 2013, around the same time Sarah started dating her boyfriend Jacob, she had been sending her daughter anywhere but home. Grace had a learning disability, and in June of 2013, the Philadelphia Inquirer reports that Grace was placed in a residential treatment home where she started the seventh grade. She was there for 6 months, which puts her release date around December. 7 months after her release, in July of 2014, Grace was placed back in the residential treatment home. According to the outlet, Grace was there for another 6 months before she then moved from Pennsylvania to North Carolina to live with family. In August of 2015, Grace started ninth grade in North Carolina, but 3 months later was back in Philadelphia living with Sarah and her little brother. Just to put it out there, while Grace was being shipped around from home to home, her little brother never left Sarah's sight. I don't like it either. With all of that moving around, Grace was only home for 8 months before she disappeared, and it's safe to say that all eyes were on Sarah, they just had no leads. On October 11th, 2016, 4 months after Grace went missing, Penn Live reports that police went to the house that Sarah was staying at to get medical records for Grace so that they could enter her into a national database. According to different reports, it looks like Sarah might have been a little hesitant about this, but gave them access to the records. One single month later, news broke that Sarah Packer had been arrested. According to the reporter online, she'd been charged with felony child endangerment, but no one knew why, because Grace, as far as anyone else knew, was still missing. She'd also been charged with misdemeanor obstruction for withholding information and making misleading statements. That tracks. Her bond was set at $200,000, but against the prosecutor's wishes, was eventually lowered to a whopping $10,000, meaning that she could get out of jail if she could come up with $1,000, and that was a real concern because they knew something that no one else did yet. It took another month, but on December 22nd, 2016, local authorities held a press conference, and the details were horrifying. According to the reporter online, 2 months prior to this press conference, on Halloween night of all nights, two hunters stumbled across a badly decomposed head and torso in the woods. Obviously, they called the police, and with the help of canines, were able to locate additional body parts, two arms and two legs. It took about a week, but with the medical records Sarah had provided, police were able to determine that the body found in the woods more than 70 miles from her home was Grace Packer. What was once a missing persons case was now a homicide investigation, and Sarah Packer was officially named a person of interest. You can see now why the prosecutor was more than against lowering Sarah's bond, but what was done was done. Just a day after that press conference, her boyfriend came up with the $1,000 and Sarah was free as a bird. Seven days after being released from jail, Sarah attempted to commit suicide by overdosing, but she wasn't the only one. On the exact same day, NBC 10 reports that Jacob's other girlfriend, you heard that correctly, found him unresponsive on the bathroom floor after he too tried to commit suicide by overdose. The other girlfriend called 911, and when the dispatcher asked if she knew why Jacob might do this, she said, "I don't know if you have watched the news lately. Someone we were involved with was recently, it's a big mess. It's a big mess and I don't really know how to explain it, but oh my God." Jacob had left a suicide note behind, which according to the outlet read, "I'm sorry that I'm taking the coward's way out, but I don't have any strength left in me. People want to judge me and lie and break me down. They have. I can't exist with Sarah in jail, and those fucking lying pigs in the whore media have made it impossible for us to live. They don't care how many lives or laws they break. I know you will always know that we had nothing to do with this, no matter what lies they tell. I'm sorry to leave you. Remember all I've taught you. Be brave, stand tall, and do your best to be stronger than I was. I love you, Daddy." The fact that Jacob signed it Daddy wasn't the weirdest part of this letter. The weirdest part was that Sarah was out of jail at the time of his suicide attempt, which begs the question, when was this letter written? Had he been planning on killing himself before he bailed her out, or was he foreshadowing? Time will tell. Both Sarah and Jacob survived their suicide attempts, and regardless of Jacob's insistence that he didn't have anything to do with Grace's murder and that the lying pigs and the whore media were ruining their lives, it was them who ruined their own lives and took Grace's. While in the ICU, Jacob sang like a fucking canary, confessing to everything he had done to Grace and all of Sarah's involvement in it. Grace's death was the result of a rape-murder fantasy at the hands of her mother and her mother's boyfriend. Lehigh Valley Live reports that according to Jacob's confession, he and Sarah started planning it as far back as the fall of 2015, which is when she returned home from North Carolina. They didn't follow through with their plan until July of 2016. Abington Township Police reports that on the morning of July 8th, 2016, Sarah and Jacob woke Grace up and, still groggy and in her pajamas, drove her to the apartment that Jacob and his other girlfriend, and sometimes Sarah, lived in. Once they got there, the torture began. This is about to get really source heavy, but several very thorough outlets helped piece together the hell that they put Grace through. As Sarah and Jacob were walking Grace into the house, Jacob struck her in the face several times, splitting her lip. According to NBC 10, Jacob said, "It wasn't to be mean, that it was a weird fantasy kind of thing." Beaten and bleeding, Sarah and Jacob took Grace to the attic where he proceeded to rape her. I hate even talking about this, but this is the reality of what she went through. According to Penn Live, Jacob stated that Sarah got sexually aroused as she watched him do it. The Philadelphia Inquirer reported that at one point, Grace made eye contact with her mother, likely hoping that she would save her, but all Sarah said was, "I can't help you anymore. This is your life now." The assault on Grace went on for hours before Abington Township Police reports that Sarah left the house to buy some Tylenol PM, which Jacob gave her, telling her that it would help with the pain. According to NBC 10, Jacob told the police, "I didn't want this to be a terror show for her. I wanted it to be fun." Penn Live reported that they wound up giving Grace an overdose of the Tylenol PM, which she threw up, so they gave her some more. According to NBC 10, after the beating, assault, and overdose of Grace, Jacob told police that Sarah then bound Grace's hands and feet with zip ties, put a ball gag in her mouth, and left her in the attic closet, hoping that the heat would kill her. But it didn't. When they checked on Grace the next day, she was still alive and had managed to break free from the zip ties and get the ball gag out of her mouth. A broken zip tie was actually found still on the floor. Instead of freeing Grace from the 18-hour hell that she had just endured, the Philadelphia Inquirer reports that Jacob got behind her, put her in a chokehold, and slowly suffocated her, telling her, "Just go, honey, just go." Again, Grace looked at her mother, and again, her mother did nothing to save her. Instead, Sarah grabbed her daughter's hand and told her it was okay to go. Once Grace was dead, the outlet states that Sarah suggested they put her body in a box filled with kitty litter and mothballs to hide the smell. So that's what they did. Grace's body stayed in that box in the attic between boxes of Jacob's comic books for 3 months, until the police came knocking for those medical records. After the visit from police, Jacob and Sarah got scared and decided it was time to dispose of Grace's body. So, on October 16th, the Philadelphia Inquirer reports that Sarah went to a tractor supply and bought a bow saw and 2 blades. It was caught on CCTV footage. With the saw and extra blades in hand, the two of them went to the attic, removed Grace's badly decomposed body, took it to the bathroom, dismembered her, drove into the middle of nowhere, and left her body there, hoping that no one would find it. According to NBC 10, Jacob compared dismembering Grace's body to cutting up a 20-pound turkey. On January 7th, 2017, both Jacob and Sarah were charged with Grace's murder, along with a slew of other charges, including rape, conspiracy to commit rape, kidnapping, and tampering with physical evidence. Both of them were denied bond, and regardless of Jacob's extremely detailed confession, both of them pled not guilty. This also meant that both of them were facing the death penalty. While prosecutors were waiting for the trial, investigators did their best to try and track down every single foster child that had ever gone through the Packer household, and some of them actually wound up speaking to the Associated Press. One of them told the outlet that Sarah had always favored Grace's younger brother and had always demanded that Grace be normal despite her learning disability. Another former foster daughter told the Associated Press that Sarah was a big bully to Grace and that she treated her horribly, that she would yell and scream at Grace because her brain didn't work like everyone else's. A third foster daughter came forward to the outlet and echoed that Sarah and Grace's adopted father, David, were really mean to Grace, saying that they would hit her, keep her in her room, and take things from her. The common denominator between the two men who abused Grace was her mother. The abuse had been going on for years, and it's not like no one knew about it. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, the State Welfare Division investigated a report about David sexually abusing Grace as early as 2006. One of their former foster daughters told NBC 10 that she'd seen and reported the abuse against Grace to a foster care agency, but says that we weren't listened to. No one cared to hear what was going on. In another instance, a former foster daughter told the Associated Press that she had looked at David's phone and saw photos and videos of him sexually abusing another foster daughter and told a family member about it. The family member contacted police in January of 2010, and it looks like that was what finally put a stop to the Packers' foster care and took David out of the picture. Everyone else was freed from the nightmare, but Grace had been adopted. She was legally Sarah's child. Sure, she was removed for a short period of time, but in the end, she was returned. The The back and forth before the awaited trial dragged on for 2 years. But in February of 2019, Jacob decided to change his plea to guilty on all charges. He got no plea deal, he just pled guilty, knowing that a jury would still have to decide whether or not he'd receive the death penalty or life without parole. According to NBC 10, he said, "Just be as merciful as possible. It wasn't a good thing to do. Obviously a huge mistake. Never again. I just don't want to be murdered in jail." Yeah, he can fuck right off with that. Grace's mother, Sarah, also agreed to plead guilty, but hers did come with a stipulation that she not be put to death. At Jacob's sentencing hearing, Sarah took the stand and started trashing Grace, saying that she was a very difficult child. I can't even begin to fathom why, but according to NBC 10, she told the court that Grace had become a non-entity, that she didn't exist anymore, and wanted Grace to go away. Jacob's confession was played at the hearing, and in it, he too trashed Grace, saying that she was a sociopath and he had a fantasy to get rid of her. But Grace wasn't a handful. She wasn't a sociopath or any of these bullshit adjectives that these ratbags had to tell themselves to try and justify what they had done to her. Every single thing that I have read about Grace from any other person on the planet has said that she was kind to her bones, that she cared about anyone and everyone before she cared about herself, that she was always positive, gracious, and grateful, and that all she ever wanted was to be everyone's friend. None of that ever mattered to Sarah and Jacob, though. To them, she was disposable. NBC 10 quoted the prosecutor who said it best when he told the court they decided together that Grace was not worth the air that she breathed. Sarah seemed to try and make excuses for herself when she told the court that she'd gotten caught up in Jacob's fantasy and didn't think she could tell him no without losing him. This bitch literally admitted to letting her boyfriend rape and torture her daughter because she didn't want him to break up with her. There are no words. It took 3 days of deliberation, but on March 28th of 2019, the jury unanimously agreed that Jacob Sullivan be sentenced to death. According to NBC 10, the judge told him, "The butchery in this case was beyond my ability to describe. You have no soul." The following day, Sarah was sentenced to life in prison plus an additional 52 to 102 years. The same outlet reports that the judge told her, "There is no cure for people like you. Evil attracts evil. And Jacob Sullivan, you found one of your own." 3 months after Jacob's sentencing, he had the audacity to ask that his death sentence be changed to life. But it didn't matter because 11 months later, NBC 10 reports that he died from a ruptured aortic aneurysm. In case you're wondering, it looks like that makes for a painful death. In the years since Grace's murder, Lehigh Valley Live reports that Grace's little brother, along with state lawmakers, have proposed Grace's Law, which would require the law to define the word valid when it comes to child services reports. It seems insane that it isn't defined already. It would also make it so that private agencies would have to keep records of founded and unfounded abuse and general protective services reports for 30 years. Apparently, they can be expunged like they never even happened after 1 to 10 years. According to the Bucks County Courier-Times, Grace's Law also calls for a statewide management system for all child welfare cases so abusers can't move from county to county to avoid being detected. Lehigh Valley Live quoted Grace's brother as saying, "I want all of you to find a way to make sure you watch out for all the kids so that a loss like Grace's never happens again. Do your best to help kids when they cannot help themselves. If all of you do this, it means Grace's loss has value. If you all care about the impact of my loss, you will help make sure that Grace becomes a hero that I already know she is." Cases involving children are difficult to research, and I know they're difficult to hear, but they're a horrifying reality, and something has to change. If you even suspect that a child is being abused, please contact your local police and child services. We've seen in other cases that it can also be helpful to notify the school the child attends. If you don't know what to do with the information you have, you can call the Child Help National Child Abuse Hotline 24/7 at 1-800-4-A-CHILD. It's better to say something and it be nothing than to say nothing and it be something. For all photos pertaining to this case, check out Grace's highlight at the top of my Instagram profile at @TheHeatherAshley and join me there tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, where you go live with me and we talk about today's episode and all other true crime cases on your mind. If you like your podcast ad-free, head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/BigMadTrueCrime, or for just one whole dollar a month, your episodes are totally ad-free. If you need more episodes in your life, for just $5 a month, you get a bonus episode on the first Monday of every month. All your episodes are ad-free, and you'll also receive a forever discount code for all Big Mad True Crime merch. And of course, anytime you sign up, you get instant access to all previous bonus episodes. I'll be bringing you a brand new case a week from today, and I cannot wait. But until then, we out.